Welcome to episode number 65 of the Inspirational Athletes Podcast here on the Always Lancaster Podcast Network. I'm your host, John Walk, sports reporter for LNP Newspaper and LancasterOnline.com in Lancaster County, Pennsylvania. For you newbies out there who might be unfamiliar with this, the Inspirational Athletes Podcast is simply a chat with local athletic figures who have overcome adversity, either on the playing surface or off, or who might just have interesting stories to tell of their journeys in athletics. And look, man, life can just be hard sometimes. We all bumps in the road of life. And goal for me anyway, maybe somebody can listen to this and pull something out of it that might help you improve as a person or face whatever challenges you kind of have in front of you. On this week's show is guest Nate Pagan. He's a Manheim Township High School alum who went on to play college ball at Clarion University and then later at Westchester University as a defensive back on the football field. Since his playing days ended, Pagan has followed a career in coaching football. It's taken him from SUNY Cortland for a couple seasons to Stevenson University for two seasons to now in his current gig as an offensive assistant slash tight ends coach at Villanova University in Philadelphia. He's just coming off his first season coaching in the Division I ranks. We get into a lot of that just as far as his playing days and then his time coaching, what he's learned from it all, how he's going about improving from year to year as a coach, and kind of the philosophies that has helped him progress in life in general. And I think he has a really good outlook just in terms of, he's a coach. He's developing these boys into men. And of course, he's going to have some principles to kind of live by to improve these guys. And he's put in a lot of work, man. He's a very hard worker. And I think that comes across with his work ethic. I think there's a lot of good things that you guys can pull out of this. All right. One last programming note before we move forward. Whereas before we had an Always Lancaster podcast feed where all the podcasts were under one feed, we now have our own separate feed by searching Always Lancaster Inspirational Athletes in iTunes or Google Play. So go there, hit subscribe. Feel free to go back to listen to some awesome previous shows in the archives. Last week's guest was Zarek Valentin, Portland Timbers of the MLS. He's also a Manheim Township alum, and actually Nate talks about a little bit how he played soccer with Zarek back in the day. So feel free to go back and listen to that. We have awesome guests lined up. Next week we'll have Kelly Daggett, Lancaster Catholic grad. She's going into her third year on the Penn State women's lacrosse team. So feel free to check that out moving forward. All right, with all that out of the way, on to our conversation with Nate Pagan. Enjoy. All right, so I kind of want to start. I don't know, a lot of this has been shared yet, just as far everybody knows you from your playing days, kind of being the superstar on the football field and even the basketball court a little bit. But even before then, can we kind of back up a little bit just as far as the family and the home life? I don't know, how many siblings did you have? Was it an athletic household? What was it like growing up?
Yeah, I grew up here in Lancaster, in Lititz. I have one brother, two sisters. I'm the youngest. So I've kind of followed in their footsteps. A very athletic family. We like to say we get it from my dad more than anybody else. My dad was a national kickboxing champion back in the day. So,
Wow. Like,
we grew up around karate, kickboxing, boxing. And, my dad actually owned a bunch of karate schools here in Lancaster. So that's kind of what we did. And then as I grew up, I did that a lot. And then he always, pushed me, my brothers and sisters, away from it a little bit because, we learned a lot of the self-discipline and things like that, but he wanted us to kind of get away and play other sports. So I grew up playing soccer. I tried lacrosse, played football, played basketball. He always wanted me to wrestle because I have a bunch of cousins and uncles who were very good Lancaster wrestlers. Never really got into it. But, yeah, I grew up from an athletic background, but mainly my dad. And then my mom is actually one of 13. So she has seven brothers, and we come from a very competitive background when it comes to, all of my uncles and things like that.
You must have got a lot of Christmas presents then back in the
day. Yeah, back in the day, not anymore. All my nieces and nephews get all the presents.
What's the highest you progressed to with karate?
I was a brown belt, And then that's when I, kind of got away from it. I was always interested in it and did it and was pretty good. But, again, my dad always wanted us to, he taught it because he wanted us to build that self-discipline and things like that. And then from there, I kind of grew away from it. Grew up, actually, soccer was my very first sport, and loved playing soccer. I played club soccer growing up. I actually played with Zarek and those guys and people a lot and a bunch of good soccer players here in Lancaster. And then I played football and football and soccer, obviously, in the same time frame when you get to the high school days. And then I kind of gave that up in ninth grade and solely focused on football.
Yeah.
And basketball, and that was basically
all right. You heard Nate mention Zarek. Zarek Valentin was a guest on the show last week, so feel free to go back and check that out. All right, Nate, graduated from Manheim Township High School 2008. During that time, played football, basketball scholastically, and was named the school's student athlete of the year as a senior. In that senior year, selected Lancaster Lebanon League wide receiver of the year and the conference's basketball defensive player of the year. Defensive back in football and wide receiver, I guess, kind of coming up through.
Yeah.
I guess, was that just kind of one of the natural fits for you, just as far as speed and size, I guess?
Yeah. Actually, growing up, when I played midgets, the first year I ever played was D-team, and I actually was a nose guard. So you can imagine, I was like the littlest guy on the field. Still always have been. But I played nose guard, and then as I grew up a little bit, I started to play receiver and then defensive back from like C-team to like A-team. And then when I got to my freshman year, I was like 5'5", maybe 100 pounds. So I didn't play freshman football. I played A-team football. And that basically, because I physically, I don't think I was ready to play freshman football with bigger kids. So I played A-team, and then from there I went on to play varsity after my freshman year. But, I mean, never would have thought, you know, from that A-team to that experience was kind of crazy. And then I played defensive back and receiver.
And then basketball, you know, we kind of always hear, at least from, so I cover basketball in the winter right now.
Yeah.
And a lot of the times the football guys kind of come, the sixth man and the first guy off the bench, and oftentimes they come and pick up two quick fouls right away because they're still in that football mentality.
Yeah.
But for you to be named a defensive player of the year, you were kind of able to balance that defensive guy and kind of put away that football side a little bit
Yeah.
You know, at least do it. I'm just kind of curious, like, just kind of your approach basketball-wise. Like, did you know, okay, my role's defense, I'll just pass the ball around on offense?
That's funny. Basically, when you're done playing, when your football season's done, you get right into basketball, and there's, like, no time off. So I was huffing and puffing, like, the first 3 weeks of basketball season because it's just a completely different sport. The metabolism and the way you condition your body is 1,000 times different. So when I got to basketball, you know, I was always pretty quick, but that was kind of, like, one of the things I kind of thrived myself on was playing defense. So Coach Crater and Coach Johns, who is now the head coach at Township, you know, they always put me on like the best player, and really I had no other job. I would just chase him around. So like I always had to cover like Lamar Patterson, who was phenomenal, but I would just chase him around the court. Austin Alexi were really good basketball players. Kyle McConnell, the kid from Cedar Crest, I would just chase these dudes around all the time. And then offensively, I actually wasn't allowed to shoot much. They told me I wasn't allowed to shoot because I really couldn't. I wasn't a good shooter. I think it was probably because my body wasn't mature enough. I barely got the ball to the rim, so I just kind of facilitated and would dish the ball and kind of just pride myself on defense more than anything.
That's fine with me. I was a defensive guy in basketball as well. All right, so back in football, senior year 2007, you guys go 11-2, which at the time was the program
yeah.
record before this past year's team
yep.
Set the new thing. But that season, 2007, District 3 4A semifinalists. Lost to Governor Mifflin overtime 28-21. What do you take away either from that game or just that season as a whole that you kind of still carry with you today?
Yeah, that season was obviously memorable. I mean, it's funny when we watched Township play, I believe, Wilson in the district this past year. Second one. There was like a little bittersweetness from I was watching with a bunch of my buddies who we all played with. So obviously we were super ecstatic for them, but we always think back to our senior year, and Coach Melnick was our head coach at the time, who's now at Mount Lebanon. And you know, that season was something that we still talk about. Like, we still feel like we should have went to states and won states just because of the talent we had on that team. But obviously seeing the kids now and seeing how well they did this past year with Coach Evans is phenomenal. That season for us was
would you have played with Bostic?
I did play with Bostic.
Okay.
I played with Bostic my sophomore and junior year.
Okay.
So I grew up watching like George Egger and Solomon Silva, who were the really good receivers back in like 2000 and I want to say 6. I actually would have been 5.
I was just curious. Sorry to
no, you're
you
fine.
The
yeah.
And then you off on a tangent.
My junior year, Pat was our quarterback, and the other receiver was Jay Ridinger. who was a coach at F&M, and now he's, I think he's an assistant at Warwick. So him and I were really close. And then my senior year was Mark Mellinger. And then Mark got hurt our third game of the year against Hemfield. And then we kind of switched our whole offense and went to the whole Razorback and things like that. So that year was definitely memorable. We still talk about it today. But now, obviously, Township has a new record. We're definitely – I follow them all the time, so we're excited for those
when
kids.
When does Clarion come into play for you?
So as I got to my senior year, was obviously looking at colleges, and coaches came in to talk to us. I wasn't like highly recruited. I was only like 5'6", 145 pounds. I was pretty small. And then I was talking to Westchester, Clarion, Shippensburg, and it kind of came down to Clarion and Shippensburg. Clarion had told me, you know, I had the opportunity to get a scholarship and then go play as a freshman. So I took that opportunity, went to Clarion, and, you know, I spent a year there, and, I enjoyed the aspect of football. I didn't enjoy the aspect of the place the school was at, as far as, like, it snowed all the time. You know, it is a great college. Don't get me wrong, but I wasn't happy being there. I loved football. But other than that, I was like, you know, I could do this an hour closer to home or at another college. So
I had trouble finding stats from that season. I was trying to go back and look in the archive. But you did you start,
yeah,
as you said?
Well, I redshirted my first four games, and then they pulled my red shirt, so I started the last six games of the year as a true freshman. You know, I think I had like maybe 18 catches for like 200 yards, so it wasn't anything crazy.
Because the reason I asked that, if you go from starting at Clarion, okay, you don't like the situation there, you're going to transfer to Westchester,
yeah,
and then you end up basically not seeing the field all that. I don't even know if you started a game in the 4 years.
Yeah, I didn't. You know, I started, and again, you know, I always talk about it with my parents because they're always like, would you have changed anything? I don't think so. You know, I obviously probably would have started all 4 years at Clarion, and then I transferred to Westchester. I actually sat out the first year, got cut, actually, as a walk-on, and then they brought me back in the summer. I forget what year it was of, like, oh, I think it was 10. And that's when, you know, I earned a scholarship going into my senior year. But yeah, it was, I didn't play much when I was at Westchester. I kind of worked hard. Everybody knew I worked hard, returned punts and kicks a little bit here and there and played sparingly. And that was basically it. That was my college career.
Yeah,
it wasn't anything spectacular.
2009 didn't see the field. 2010 appeared in two games. 2011 appeared in 10 games, but did not start, registered just seven tackles. 2012, 10 games played, six total tackles. Plus, you did see action at punt return and kick return over those years, but still, three-year letter winner at a Division II school, like, that's nothing, you know, that's a lot more than what most folks can say. Don't sell yourself short, for sure. But I think you kind of just, because I was going to ask you, like, how you look back on that, but I think you kind of just, you hit on that pretty well. When does, okay, so you graduated from Westchester 2013, bachelor's degree in liberal studies and professional studies.
Yep.
What was the goal there?
So going in to college, I wanted to be a teacher. I wanted to go health and phys ed and coach high school football, and that was it. You know, I kind of got sold. Coach Melnick in high school was a huge mentor for me, and I really looked up to him. Then I got to college, and I was like, was pretty far deep into health and phys ed, and I would have had to do practicum and so on and so forth. And that's when, you know, I kind of fell in love with my college coaches, with Coach Zwan and those guys. And they kind of influenced me a lot. They kind of, you know, I was always a pretty smart football player, and I spent a lot of time with them, whether it was watching film or I would just come in and just to hang out with them. And I kind of enjoyed the lifestyle a little bit that they kind of lived. And they kind of talked me into becoming a college football coach. And that's when I was like, you know what, health and phys ed isn't for me. So I went liberal studies and health and coaching, which was two minors. So really, I'd only need like five classes to really finish or to get my teacher certification in health and phys ed.
Even now?
Yeah, even now.
Wow.
But,
so did you have to stay in school longer then if you switched majors or minors?
No, I ended up, I had a fifth year because I sat out a year.
Oh, right.
Then I stayed that fifth year, and then I just finished. I was already getting a minor in coaching, and then I had already taken half the classes I needed for the health minor, being in health and phys ed. So it kind of all just worked out. And then I finished, and now here I am.
It's kind of a blessing in disguise, though. Like, you think back on your decision of going from Clare into Westchester. Yeah, you don't see the field, but boom, here you go, and you see these coaches, and you learn, and now you're in this field. Like, it, maybe that wouldn't have happened otherwise.
Yeah.
What's the next step? Like, you graduate from Westchester, and the first coaching gig is at SUNY Cortland, which is
SUNY
in New York.
Yep.
Like, I don't know. How do you kind of enter that field as a newbie? Do you know somebody there, I guess?
It kind of was weird. Like, when I got done that fifth year, that spring semester, I only had like 3 classes left. So I basically, student assistant, I was at Westchester helping Coach Furlong coach the defensive backs, helped out there. And then I kind of got stuck. I was to the point where, like, all right, now what do I do? Like, how do I kind of step into this profession? And I didn't really know where to go, but I remembered anytime I came home, I always saw George Egger and I always saw Jay Ridinger, and they both were coaching at F&M. So I always knew Coach Troxel, the head coach at F&M, and anytime I was home, I would go see them. And I told him, hey, I was going to volunteer at F&M and just do it and just be a volunteer and try to make money on the side and just figure it out. And he actually contacted me one day and was like, hey, I know you're trying to break through in this profession. I have a buddy at SUNY Cortland. His name is Greg Roskis. He's the offensive coordinator there. He's looking for a receivers coach. And I was just like, oh, well, this is like 2 weeks prior to the season starting. He was like, yeah, here's his number. Give him a call. Give the head coach a call. So I did. And I went up there, like, I think 2 weeks prior to the season starting. I had on, like, this is funny. Coach McNeil probably wouldn't have hired me if he saw me that day. I had on, like, a polo, khaki shorts, and, like, boat shoes. And I went up and interviewed, and he gave me the job. And we always joke about it because, I mean, now he's a great mentor to me. But if he would have saw me that day in that outfit, he probably wouldn't have hired me.
And of all the positions to need a coach at SUNY Cortland,
yeah,
wide receivers, you know, that's a position that you played, you know, in high school. You're super duper familiar. Like, had it been any other position, who knows how that works out.
I would have been lost.
wide receivers coach there 2013 and 14, those 2 seasons. I guess kind of what's the progression? Like, what's your role there? What's your responsibilities in those 2 seasons?
In my first year, I coached the receivers, and I coached the kick returners and punt returners, and I kind of did that. My role was, I mean, you think about it, I did it. You know, I was breaking down film. We actually had video coordinators at the time, so, like, the kids would come in, student assistants, and they do all the filming, and then they upload it to a system. And then once that's in, I would input all the play calls. If we were playing an opponent, I would break down the opponent based off of what our terminology was. From there, I would draw up all the new formational plays on what they call Vizio nowadays, is what college coaches use. It's like a video editing system, which a lot of people know about. And then on top of that, you know, you have to worry about the kids' academics. You know, I monitored study hall, did a little bit of everything when I was there. And then in 2014, I actually was going to leave and come take a job here locally at F&M. Was offered a little bit more money, so I stayed. And then I was co-special teams coordinator because I wanted – when you're young and you want to step in, you got to know special teams. That's mm-hmm. a big thing for you. So then I installed the shield punt, was something new that we wanted to install, and I installed that. And then I was a special teams coordinator there for a year, and then – finish that up. But
yeah, and I guess so, a few things there. First off, going back on the video editing side of it, I imagine your weekends, like, that's your life, because after the game's played Saturday, you're getting ready for the next opponent by getting the film for the next opponent, I guess, breaking all that down. Are you going back over SUNY Cortland's game on Saturday and breaking that film down too?
Yeah, so normally after the games, we waited till it was uploaded. Once it was uploaded, you know, we inputted the play calls from that game, and then once the opponent shared the film, you know, it was right away. You're starting to break down that film. So Saturdays weren't too long, but Sundays and Mondays were always the longest days as you begin to game plan the opponent. Mm-hmm. And once you get to a certain point in the week, you have to have a certain number of games broken down. Right. So there's a lot that goes into it. It's crazy.
And I imagine even in that session, just those Sundays and Monday, you're probably learning a lot about football that opened your eyes like, oh, I thought I knew so much already that it's completely new to you even as you're going about that, I guess?
Yeah, when I first got into it, I was, 22 years old?
Wow.
I had nothing else to do, so it was just football all the time. So, like, I'd stay in the office pretty late just reading and finding things to do.
Was that the SUNY Cortland, was that part-time gig? Was it full-time?
It's one of those, like, part-time money, full-time hours.
Okay.
You know, it's like a restricted earnings.
Because the reason I asked that, like, were you working a part-time job, I guess, during the off-season to kind of support yourself?
Yeah, during the summer times, I would work camps and things like that. I actually worked at Powertrain when I came home just to make some extra money.
So still staying involved in athletics or football and stuff like that.
Yep.
And then the special teams you had mentioned, you started getting involved in that. Yeah, you were a punt returner, kick returner a bit, probably in both high school and college as well. But, like, did that translate at all, or was that just completely wipe the slate clean that you have to – because if you're a returner, it's different if you're setting up a punt shield, I guess. Right?
Yeah, no, we I went to Westchester to learn how they installed it and basically installed kind of the same system at Cortland. So, you know, I kind of did my research. I went and you learn as you grow from other schools and things like that. So, I mean, obviously I went back to my alma mater because they're always open arms to me.
Mm.
And just you kind of just find ways to learn. You learn from the way coaches teach, and you go from there.
I'll get into that in a bit here down the road. But as far as, so you go from SUNY Cortland Division III program to another Division III school at Stevenson, I believe 2 years there, 2015-16.
Yep.
Special teams coordinator and wide receivers coach, kind of the same thing you were doing a little bit?
Yeah.
Does the responsibilities change? Do you add any more to your plate than what we just talked about?
Yeah, you know, so I took that job. You know, I was full-time there. Was another opportunity to, you know, get another school, learn more from another program. But yeah, I had way more responsibilities being a full-time coach there. You know, I was the video coordinator, so instead of the students doing it, I did it all. So I was the video coordinator. I dealt with, you know, the social media. I did all the social media from Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, all of that stuff. I was the academic monitor for all the students. So it was a lot more was on my plate than before. And then, you know, I was a special teams coordinator, so, you know, you have to make sure you're organized and doing the whole deal. But
I forgot to ask you this earlier when you mentioned academic monitor. The only thing I can think of is, like, that Netflix series Last Chance You and that Brittany woman, I guess, as far as being the academic advisor. I know that was kind of more of a full-time gig, but is that, like, anything that you're related to?
Yeah, it's very similar. I'm not an academic – I wouldn't say an academic advisor like they are, like the professors. But, yeah, if a kid had a problem with a class or, you know, he needed – to get tutoring, you know, he came to me, and I would have to make sure, you know, I set him up with the right teacher, professor, or maybe email them or help kids email a teacher because some of them don't know how to properly use words. So yeah, I mean, you do anything to help these kids.
And that's 50, 60 plus players that you're dealing with, man.
Yeah.
That's a crazy busy job, I'm sure.
Yeah.
All right, so you go from Stevenson Division III program up to Villanova this past season. First off, D3 to D1, why make that jump? Why did you want to do that?
You know, I was full-time. I got to a point where, you know, do I continue to, you know, be a full-time coach and continue to basically coach and be satisfied, or do I want to, you know, challenge myself as I continue to grow? And, you know, I had a connection at Cortland. From Cortland to Stevenson, I had a connection there, and then from Stevenson to Villanova, I had a connection there. So obviously when I got into coaching, I used to go visit Villanova in the springtime. Coach McNeil, the head coach at Cortland, is best friends with the head coach of Villanova.
Right.
Ola Adams, who is now the defensive backs coach at Villanova, was our defense coordinator at Cortland. So I had a connection with those guys.
That's a lot of how the coaching game is, too. I didn't know, because I was going to ask you, I imagine playing at Westchester, if they're, you know, being
there's a connection there as well.
School, there's a connection with the Villanova Philadelphia school.
Yeah, there's a big connection there as well. Coach Juan knows all the coaches at Villanova. They actually do a interviews and things like that every Thursday. So Coach Vaughn, I see just about every Thursday when he comes up to Villanova.
And offensive assistant slash tight ends coach this past season, 2017, for Villanova. Also responsible for the recruiting area in the Atlanta area and nationally in Alaska, Idaho, Oregon, Washington. At least that's what the profile says on the website. Okay, so you go from D3 to D1. Just kind of, I don't know, I can ask you what are the differences there, but you could probably write a book on just how different it is.
Yeah.
There's probably just so much more that you're doing.
Yeah, there's, you know, I think back and it's like, man, I was breaking down film. Now I break down film by myself. But it's from recruiting, it's different. From the mentality of the kids, it's different. The hours are different. Mm-hmm. The type of, you know, the offenses are different. You know, it's just the speed is different. there's so much that goes into play with it. And when I left Stevenson, obviously I loved that program, but I was ready to challenge myself as a coach as well, and I wanted to learn more. And if you haven't looked, but a lot of the coaches at Villanova have been there for years. Mm. A lot of them are tenured, and they've stuck around, and I think that shows the success of the program. And I used to go up and learn from these guys all the time. Brian Flynn is the receivers coach for, I believe, 12 years now. Wow. You know, when I first got in, I used to go visit him and just ask him personal questions. And we joke about it now. He's like, man, you were so annoying back in the day.
Well, that's a good thing. You're probably asking questions.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm curious about the recruiting aspect, because if you're at a D3 program, oftentimes you're probably waiting until the very end when the leftover kid, not anything against these guys, but kids that don't get the D1, D2 scholarships still looking to play in college.
Yeah.
Those are the guys that you were recruiting at SUNY Cortland and Stevenson, whereas now D1, you're getting the better players, I guess. I'm kind of wondering your target specifically. Like, what are you looking for in a kid, either grade-wise or on the field? Kind of walk me through that.
Yeah, it's much different. You know what type of kid you're going after. When we sit down as a staff, you obviously look at your roster. You look at what you're losing. Mm-hmm. You look at what's coming back, and then you got to decipher, hey, you know, how many O-linemen are we bringing in? How many receivers are we bringing in? This is what we're going after. And then it really comes down to – one, the recruiting coach, you know, does he have an O-lineman in his specific area that he thinks is a good football player? If he does, then it then goes to the positional coach, right? And he takes a look at him, whether it's his highlights or he's seen the kid in school. From there, it goes to the coordinator, whether it's offense or defense. And then from there, then the head coach sees him. So it's all a process, and it goes from coach to coach to coach. And you all basically have to sign off on this kid. Do you like this kid? Is he a character kid? Can he win in your program? And then, obviously, academically, does he fit the standards of what Villanova is?
Because I apologize for keep harping on this, but it's not often I sit across from an assistant coach from a Division I program, but I'm kind of curious, like, how early are you identifying these guys? Are they sophomores?
Yeah, I'd say that they're probably sophomores, juniors. You know, every coach has a recruiting area, so you should know what kids are up and coming in that area.
Like, do you guys already have a class of 2023 that you've already started, a list or anything?
No, but okay. we will start identifying the class of 2019.
And you said something along the lines of, okay, before you sign off on this kid, you have to check, you know, academically and just overall the type of person he is. How do you go about doing that? I imagine probably home visits and just getting to know him.
You know, our head coach and normally the positional coach would get out and home visit the kid, visit him. You know, sometimes a coach might see that kid four times in the school, you know, before he even goes and home visits that kid. So he's starting to, you know, feel that kid out and starting to get to know him on a more personal level. And then from there, you know, they're probably going to go home visit the family.
And Villanova being, you know, a better academic school, you guys have probably rigorous academic standards that kids have to meet.
You definitely, you know, a lot of that goes into play as well. So we get, you know, their GPA, obviously, we get their transcripts and so on and so forth, and then that's given to somebody to take a look at in admissions.
It's your first year at Villanova, so maybe you're not to this point, but, like, are you a coach who's making home visits and going to Friday football game?
No, right. I haven't. I've been on the road recruiting. I was in Long Island for about 2 weeks, but a lot of what I do is kind of behind the scenes. I kind of help all of our full-time coaches on the back end.
So you're kind of learning how that process works still.
Yeah,
that's
absolutely
fascinating,
absolutely.
Man. That's awesome.
You know, when I was D3, you know, I was on the road recruiting all the time. When I got here, it was like, hey, you're going to take a step back and kind of – I get a chance to kind of watch them, learn from them, and that's why I did it.
Yeah, and I know, you know, recruiting's only a part of it. A lot of it's coaching and stuff like that. On the field, let's say – can you just kind of, I'm curious, can you walk me through what a week is like for you Tuesday through Saturday, I guess? Like, what's your
days
like?
So I always take it from Saturday, we play our game. Once that game is done, you know, we upload the film and put the play calls. Then we come in on Sunday, we watch that film, we grade it, and then it's immediately working on the next opponent. So normally when I'm in on Sunday, I'm already breaking down the next opponent because we get that film probably either the night of Saturday or Sunday early morning.
When you say breaking down, sorry to cut you off here, but yeah. When you say breaking down, is it specifically you're an offensive assistant / tight end? So are you looking at the opposing team's defense or
yes.
Maybe the D-line, D-ends that
nope.
go against you? Okay, so it's all right.
I look at basically we go in and we break down and distance, hash marks, everything. Wow. Quarter, you know, run pass, all of that stuff is inputted into the system. From there, I'll break down the offense versus our upcoming opponent's defense. So I'll break down their offense in our terminology, and then I'll break down the entire defense. So I'm breaking down a full game, but prior to that day, I already have three broken down throughout the week. So it's a lot. And then Sunday, we normally start working on scouting report. Monday's a whole game plan day, and then Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, we practice in the mornings, and then there's meetings and things like that, and so on and so forth. They're long days, but...
Meetings where maybe, like, are you in a room with the other tight end saying, hey, here's what to watch for from this defensive end?
Yeah, so we always go over the scouting report, and then, you know, we'll make cut-ups and install the game plan and so on. We'll meet with the O-line to make sure we're all on the same page, and then I'll take the tight ends, and we'll meet about what we have going in. I'll put together three separate cut-ups, whether it was from practice or, you know, the opponent.
Okay.
So we're constantly meeting throughout the week on what we like, what we don't like, things we can improve upon, so on and so forth.
Are you still doing the academic advising side?
We monitor study hall, but a lot of it's on the positional coach.
Okay. Then as far as, like, we've hit a lot on the recruiting, the coaching side of it, but as a coach, you're also kind of responsible for developing these young boys into men when they get
yeah.
there before they leave. Like, how have you gone about doing that, either at Villanova or maybe over these last 5-6 years?
You know, college football and the kids, the biggest thing is about relationships. You know, I've been pretty young, so I've been able to kind of relate to these kids on a more personal basis. You know, especially now, like these kids, I have – 3 or 4 tight ends with me, and it's kind of more personal with those 4 rather than when I coach receivers and there was like 15 or 20 of them. I can actually get to know these guys really well. Like, I know what they're doing major wise. I know how many parents they have, how many kids are in the family. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, you know, these kids, and I learned it more when I spent time with the Eagles, you know, these kids need you just as much as you need them. And if you can develop them and let them know how much you care, you know, they'll do anything for you.
Mm-hmm. And as far as, kind of going ahead to this next season, does the same role for you, I guess, at Villanova?
Yeah, as of right now, yeah.
Okay, so with that being said, like, what's the one thing going into the 2018 campaign that you're looking back on from 2017? Oh, I did that wrong. I want to do better in this area.
I think the biggest thing, you know, when it comes down to, like, all the behind-the-scenes stuff, you know, I'll definitely be a little bit more organized than I probably am already, knowing what I know now and the timing and things like that. And then, obviously, from a coaching standpoint, you know, I never had coached tight ends. So schematically, you know, I now know, you know, what to expect and things like that. I've learned so much from our offensive line coach, our offense coordinator, and all the guys that are on the offensive side of the ball, where I can take some of their coaching styles and the way they teach things and now teach them to the tight ends in my kind of style of teaching as well.
And because my next question was getting, how do you go about improving overall as a coach? But I think you kind of just hit on just seeing what other coaches do, or maybe going to camps, watching videos.
Yeah, a lot of it's just professional development. You know, right now it's bowl season. You know, I'm constantly watching film, watching different games. Coach Flynn, our receivers coach, has us download all the TV games. So when we come in, when he comes in, or whenever our coaches come in, you know, we're able to watch just about every game that's been on TV or whatever it is. Wow. So, you know, just from that standpoint, that professional development, you know, going to clinics and things like that, which is a lot of times what we do in the springtime, when we have the time, we'll go visit other universities to learn, you know, maybe how they're teaching a certain scheme, a run play or a pass play that we might like. So it all goes hand in hand, you know, the development aspect and wanting to get better is huge.
So this is kind of a question that doesn't really fit a timeline per se, and I know you're still young, so maybe this part hasn't hit you yet, but like coaching is kind of one of those things where you're always going to be going from place to place to place if you stick in it for a career. I know you don't have any kids yet or anything like that, so this is kind of your baby right now, this job anyway. But oftentimes, like if even the big name coaches, when they get that big time job, they're only there maybe 5 years before they're booted out the door. When you go into this profession, is that something that you think about, that you're just going to have to accept it over the course of a career?
I mean, I think you definitely think about it, but, you know, I kind of, and this is something I've just learned through being around it, you kind of just focus on what you can do now and worry about that stuff later. You know, I always say if you do a good job now, everything else will take care of itself. And that's kind of just how I've been taking this whole coaching lifestyle, is just worry about what you can control and the rest will control itself.
That's awesome. Well, all right. So this is kind of the point of the podcast where I like to kind of leave people with like a bit of advice that might help them in their lives or their careers. Is there anything that, I don't know, maybe a philosophy that you live by or anything like that? Maybe some words of wisdom?
Biggest thing I think my dad tells me all the time is good things happen to good people who work hard. And if you can do that and take that standard into every single day, I think you'll be pretty successful.
Awesome. Great place to stop. All right. If you guys enjoyed today's Inspirational Athlete podcast, you enjoyed listening to the previous 64 episodes. Just in the last couple months, we've had some awesome guests. Former longtime Pittsburgh Steelers fullback Dan Kreider, Olympic gold medalist wrestler Brandon Slay, former WNBA star Shamiqua Holdsclaw, local football legend Eric Clare, who was a Penn State lineman in the 1990s. Just a couple weeks back, or a couple months back, I should say, we had Syracuse football long snapper Matt Keller, current Kent State punter Derek Adams, 3-year Stanford men's soccer starter Drew Skundrick, who was likely drafted into the MLS by the time you guys listen to this. Just last week, we had Portland Timbers star Zarek Valentin on the show. Excuse me. And next week, we'll be chatting with Kelly Daggett. She's a Lancaster Catholic grad who is going into her 3rd year with the Penn State women's lacrosse team. With that being said, I'm always looking for any suggestions for future guests on the show. So if you're listening to this and think, hey, I know this person, they'd be great, throw me an email, jwalk@lnpnews.com, or contact me on the Twitter @jwalklnp. All right, Nate, this is kind of the point of the program where I like to ask if there's anything you want to promote. I know you're active on Twitter. You want to put that handle out there? Any Instagram accounts?
No, I'm okay.
All right. Well, if you want to find him, it's @CoachBegun. And you can follow Villanova football coming up. It's just villanova.com, easy enough. And @NovaFootball and @NovaAthletics on the Twitter. All right. Before we wrap up here, just want to give a shout out to my colleagues, Tyler Huber and Irene Snyder. They are the engineers/producers of this podcast. Thanks to another colleague, Claudia Espenshade. She handles all the posting duties to get this thing online. So thanks to them. Thanks to you guys for listening. And thanks to Nate for sharing your story, man. I appreciate it.
Appreciate you. Thank you.
Awesome.